talk about some item that's in the news that's the sort of thing everyone will be talking about in their offices, they said. And there's only one flaw in that. It's if you hit one of those weeks where there really isn't that kind of a news item that everyone's talking about. And we seem to have hit it, really. I mean, I don't know what the options you thought were, but we could have had those E. coli cucumbers, only they've all been tipped on the rubbish dump, and I wouldn't want to offend either Spaniards or Germans here. There's the tube strike, but it hasn't happened yet, and everyone always hopes it won't type thing. There is the earthquake in Christchurch, but it's an awful long way away, and it's not as bad as the previous one, so we pass on very quickly in the news to items like that. There was Terry Pratchett's documentary about assisted dying that caught the news for a sort of 24-hour spell. And then Libya sort of rumbles gently on and was in the news yesterday and this morning, but kind of without gripping anyone because it rumbles on and it's been there for ages. So you kind of find, well, the first question that hit me really was, what is news? What is news? I just want to throw out three questions for us to just sort of chew over this lunchtime. If you like. Here's the first, which is, what is news? You know, when Fiona Bruce or Hugh Edwards sort of says at about 9:15, well, it's 10 now, and our main story tonight is, you realize that the main story isn't necessarily an objective, fact-centered, importance-rated story. There are other issues that will make it the main story. I mean, it helps if it's a crisis, doesn't it? So the Olympic Stadium and other stadia being built on time is rather frustrating for the news people because you can only tuck that down the bottom. They would have loved to have had, will it all be ready on time and once again, you know, London's failing to deliver? But no, boringly, they've got it ahead of schedule. It helps if it's a crisis. You know, if Colonel Gaddafi had been killed, then we could talk about Libya. But they're just shooting at each other. So, and we've all forgotten Haiti. That's a long way back unless you happen to live in Haiti. It helps if it's a crisis. It helps if it's got some sort of novelty value. Jeremy Vine once said this. He said, look, you need to understand when the media does news, that there's always a story they're trying to tell, a meta-narrative, a kind of overarching explanation that's behind it all, and you need to listen carefully to hear what story you're being told. It's a shrewd thing to be given, actually. Funnily enough, in the Bible, it too, like the news on the BBC or ITV, is selective. It doesn't tell you everything you can possibly say about everything that possibly is. It's wanting to tell a story. It's got an overarching explanation for life, the world, the universe. We often have got a clash of stories. And that's what's going on. Monday night, Sir Terry Pratchett did a documentary called Choosing to Die, in which he followed two men in particular who went to Dignitas in Switzerland and took their own lives. It was moving, humbling, serious, engaging, uncomfortable, all of those things. His secretary was desperately uncomfortable about it all, and at times so was he, and it was selected. It told half a story. And in that weird way where news organizations have to be careful, don't they? The BBC does a documentary over here, and then suddenly the news reporter brings it over into the news here, and it becomes a main news item. And then Newsnight has it as we talk about the news, and suddenly it's an even bigger news item to come back here from a documentary they all made in the first place. The Bible just has this word of warning to us when it comes to what is news. It talks about how the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness. It wants to say that actually God gets angry about the suppression of certain truths, which is why it's important to know what is the big story I'm being told. I just picked up a blog from someone on that whole Terry Pratchett documentary. 20 facts we didn't learn from his documentary. It was all about how this is coming in Europe. He didn't mention that the European Court of Human Rights has ruled that while there is a human right to suicide, the state has no obligation to provide citizens with the means to commit suicide. The former president of the European Bank says as soon as a man goes beyond 60 to 65 years of age, he lives beyond his capacity to produce, he costs society a lot of money, euthanasia will be one of the essential instruments of our future societies. Well, we ought to have a right wariness of any story we're told in the news. Which story am I being told behind it? But as I watched the documentary, there were two other questions that came to my mind that I think are just worth having in mind and asking yourselves. Here was the first question that came to me. What is life? What is life? I don't know if you saw it. So Terry Pratchett, he's an author. He's 62. He's got Alzheimer's. His mind is going. He can't type anymore. He has to have a secretary to do it as he dictates things. You can understand all kinds of reasons why he's concerned about where is life going to play out for him. His mind is going. One of the people he interviewed was Mike, a cabbie driver, who said, I'll give life one last throw of the dice. And in a hospice, in a wheelchair now, and as Terry Pratchett came to him, it's clear that Mike had driven him around before. He said, you know, in your mind, can you still drive around London? Yes, said Mike. I mean, could you take me to the Athenaeum? Yes, and Mike gives him all the directions, you know, over this bridge, turn left, and you're at the Athenaeum. And Terry Pratchett's clearly impressed and wondering how long his mind will do it. And as he sort of nods at him, Mike suddenly says, and that'll be £28.50. But actually, in the program, he spends time with two people, not whose minds are going so much as whose bodies are going. Peter Smedley of the canning firm, Smedley's Peas and so on, who has motor neurone disease. And a man called Andrew Coughlin, who's got MS and is depressed and in his early 40s. Smedley's 70 or so. And the sort of conversations that are coming all the time, the sort of lines that come out are lines like this. You know, is it possible to arrange the death they want? I'm not sure I want to go on living. I'd like to enjoy life for as long as I can squeeze juice out of it. And then I'd like to die. And quite strikingly, that evening, as Terry Pratchett's on Newsnight with Jeremy Paxman, something of what makes life life comes up in their conversation. Just listen to this.
Well, you've mentioned the two guys who decided to end their life.
Yes.
You haven't mentioned the cabbie in the hospice who uses this very memorable phrase. The cabbie says to you at one point, he says, let's try another roll of the dice.
Yeah.
Now, anybody might come to that conclusion, having been in a suicidal frame of mind previously.
Yes. And what's your question?
My question is, which judgment do you respect?
I respect Peter's judgment.
Killing yourself is not something to be encouraged, is it?
Good heavens, no.
No. We don't encourage it because of all sorts of ideas about the sanctity of life.
What about the dignity of life?
Is lack of dignity a sufficient reason to kill yourself?
I am sure for some people it would be.
As I say, it wasn't a thoughtless program. And it was hard not to be moved and understanding all that's going on. But you hear some of the elements of what makes life worth having as life. Can I choose what I do for myself? Do I have dignity? Am I a burden? And I would have thought they're sort of understandable questions that will go through all of our minds, won't they? It's just that it struck me as I was listening, if I'm too quick to say, well, if I don't have a choice that I can deliver on, if I don't have dignity, if I'm going to be a burden, then it's not really life worth living. I've got to be very careful because every baby starts that way. You know, when the projectile vomit hits you and the other end is messy as well and they're squalling and no, they can't have what they want. They are in a fairly undignified, choiceless, burdensome state. And yet we think there's value there. There's a life that we want to keep. And I'm asking myself again the question, what is life? See, my choice does become very strongly my choice if you watch the documentary. I don't want to burden my wife. Well, says the hospice nurse, she might want to look after you. And actually, as it turned out, the close relatives of everyone there did. Terry Pratchett's wife, Peter Smedley's wife, Andrew Coghlan's mother. My choice determines. And dignity? Are we saying there's no dignity left in those who just get frailer? I think of my father died at 93, and he just got more and more limited in life. I think of John Stott, whom I see from time to time at 90, and you kind of think, oh, all that made John Stott, John Stott, is rapidly disappearing. You know, mobility, the voice, those eyes that were penetrated, they're all dulled and frayed, and the head is down. He longs for glory. But am I saying there's no dignity in a chair-bound man now? You see, it's one of the questions one asks, what is that? Is there a value outside of me? Is there a dignity beyond my achievements and my ability to achieve? I mean, if there is, it's actually quite a humbling identity to discover. And yet suddenly an immensely secure one. Because it's not depending on me and who I am. Mike Wenham is a friend. I was at college with him. We were students together, undergraduates. He is now a vicar. He has motor neurone disease himself. He was writing in this morning's Guardian. I just happened to see it. And he said of this program, the repeated refrain, especially in the Newsnight discussion that followed, was, it's my choice. It's his choice. There was a sort of pre-suicide litany. Is this your choice? Do you understand what you're choosing? Do you want to take this mixture which will put you to sleep and kill you? Are you sure? The resigned women, in the end, could only say, it's his choice. You must choose. How shriveled is that view of existence? My world, when all is said and done, is me. My individual choice is sovereign. I want my kingdom, and the rest doesn't matter. The individual is the ace, trumping all else. Well, that's a pretty impoverished world. This is not me speaking. This is my friend in his wheelchair, with his body out of control, increasingly. It's a pretty impoverished world. In fact, interdependence is the secret of society. We're dependent on each other. And that's something for celebrating, not fearing, for embracing, not avoiding. He says this, the best thing in life is to experience the extraordinary depth with which one can be loved. It's to discover the utter disinterestedness of those who love you. To find out when you can give nothing back, literally nothing but distasteful work and pain, they still want to look after you. They still care for you. Yes, they still love you. The tragedy of Peter Smedley and Andrew Colgan, it seemed to me, is they didn't trust themselves to the journey their loved ones wanted to travel with them. Because if they had, the road might well have been rough, but they would have discovered hand in hand with them beauties of the human spirit. Few of us ever glimpse. I actually found that as moving as the documentary, don't you? What is life? Has this program really come to terms with it? But here's the other question that struck me as I watched the program, and that's this, what is death? An escape, clearly, for those involved, not so much from pain, much more from weakness, from a shriveling lifestyle choices, which is hugely understandable. But it did stop there. I mean, not a hint of a possibility of anything more, except one rather strange sentence Terry Pratchett says to the 40-year-old Andrew as he leaves him for the last time, and he just says, well, again, on the other side. No idea what he meant by it. I can understand why people think this way. Let's put an end to a life that doesn't feel worth living. But to choose to die without being sure, without knowing, without actually even thinking and asking the question about life beyond. End of weakness, sure. Start of what? No one seemed curious to even ask. And you see, once again, we'll find the Bible telling us another story. What is life? Oh, just my choice, my dignity. No, a life has a value and an identity in a God who made us and has a purpose for us and will redeem even breaking bodies. What is death? Well, an end to my weakness. No, it actually could be more than that. It could be the start of something else. Here's a stark verse in the Bible. Man is destined to die once, and after that, to face judgment. Are you sure you want to die? The nurse says, as she hands over the poisonous medicine. Yes, yes, and you can understand the yes. Are you sure you're ready to face your maker and your judge? No one even thought of asking the question. That's the bravest man I've seen, says Terry Pratchett. Or was he foolish as well? And it needn't just be the bad news either. It's just sleep. It just means it'll all be over. Again, not a hint that it could actually mean some whole new world is just beginning. You see, here's Bible hope of a day when God will wipe every tear from their eyes and there'll be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things, the crippled, fallen, broken, twisted, distorted, shriveled order of things has passed away, and there's a new life and a new creation opened up in front of us. The bravest man, or one blind to the possibilities and the opportunities. Which story am I listening to? I know. It's all a bit pie in the sky, isn't it? And that's the danger of the Bible story. You can make it sound sweet. Except for the fact that when you look at its overarching story, you keep finding it earthed in reality and in history. So you see, the Bible tells me this, that God has set a day when he'll judge the world with justice by the man he's appointed, and he's given proof of this to all men by raising him from the dead. What is life? What is death? Before we're too quick to answer, do realize you've got not only the ideas of the Bible's overarching story, but the facts of resurrection history to face up to. What's news? What's life? What's death? Thanks for listening.